Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's Stu Weber, StuWeb.com, and it is Friday, October 2nd, 2020, and I have the honor to have whistleblower Dr. Lieutenant Scott Bennett on with me, and also Professor Paul. And with that said, Scott, last Sunday you did a show with me and talked about how we need to take over the top of the military and how Trump needs to do it, clean it up. If he can't do it, we're going to have to do it. And it sent off alarms, everything. Everybody's saying it's one of the best shows they've heard. Strategy here, my man. So with that said, Scott, I'm going to let you jump in here right away.
Well, Stu, it's good to be with you. And I would just follow up with that, saying where we are today with the president allegedly getting tested for COVID-19, I think that's a very positive and very advantageous situation for us to be in, because it sets up a perfect scenario for the president to, of course, emerge unscathed and healthy and completely reborn out of the cave, if you follow Joseph Campbell's mythology and many of the other mythological tales and scenarios where the hero and the hero's journey has to be consumed by a cave or a monster or something to break out of it and emerge with a gnosis, with a superior strength that he didn't have before. So this is the president's cave. This is his being devoured in the belly of the whale, for him to cultivate internal prayers for his family, his wife, his children, and indeed the American people, to say, I reflected and I prayed to God, please don't let me be taken when America needs me most. Please don't allow the American people to suffer. Take me, but don't let them suffer. And God said, you are staying, Donald Trump, and he will be given a life, and he will emerge. And with that, he has entire heroic saga. He can ask for prayers. He can emerge strong. He can single-handedly demonstrate that the COVID-19 hydra of media fear, Democrat fear, school shutting down, businesses shutting down, mask wearing, all of that he single-handedly will destroy by his own Lazarus type of healing, supernatural coming out. And it may sound very heroic and mythological, but that's exactly what it is, and that's exactly how we need to understand it in order to understand the full dimensions of how this politically can contribute to the renaissance of America in general. And he can say, pray for me, American people, so I recover from this. And what do psychologists do when they tell depressed people to get out of their depression? Get out and help someone else. So by nature of people being depressed and sad, by them being called to pray for the president's healing, they will be healing themselves. They will be experiencing a positive physiological transformation themselves by praying for him, by wanting his good recovery. Those who don't can stew and fester and destroy themselves in their own hate-fit pit. But for the vast majority of Americans, they will pray and contribute good thoughts towards him. He will emerge. He will also say, I emerged victorious because of hydroxychloroquine, and because I got it, I'm alive. So why shouldn't every other American get it? So I'm writing an executive order that every American can get hydroxychloroquine over the counter without a doctor's note, just like aspirin or Alka-Seltzer. So that will also spin the heads of the demoniac Democrats around and cause them to go into convulsions. But I think this COVID-19 testing and moment in the cave and emergence of the president as a new man and his continuation next week on the campaign trail, even if he has to fly Air Force One himself, he will be demonstrating his absolute unyielding passion and dedication to America. And I'm telling you, if there's not tears flowing down people's cheeks when he has the right speeches given to capture this moment, there's something wrong with Americans. But I think he's going to do it well. I think Americans are going to rise up and support him. And this is part of the strategy that needs to be employed to, again, arouse leaders and strong individuals and strong-minded people to stand up and lead the way for the followers and the weak-minded people to follow. We have to know our place, and our place as leaders is to attack, go to the sound of the guns, don't ask permission, just go charging ahead. And in the power of our momentum, followers will naturally be swept behind us going in the same direction. That's the nature of leadership and the nature of success and victory. And so I would just say this is a great, great October surprise, and it is a great psychological operation that will defeat not only the COVID-19 and their star zombie mummy Biden, but also the vampirous Harris, and it will, I think, contribute to the success of the president in this election. Go ahead, Peter.
Well, I tell you, I'm going to let Paul, Professor Paul, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Add to that.
Scott, I appreciate your efficacy. I'm very impressed by the narrative that you've created. You said allegedly it's 33 days before the election, and we're told that President Trump now has the coronavirus. Do you believe it, or do you think this is a psyop?
Well, I think if it's a legitimate test, there's strong probability that these tests are picking up the flu shot that he was given several years ago, if not, you know, recently. He was forced to get a flu shot, and indicators are suggesting that the COVID-19 testing picks up fragments of these flu shots and prior flus and sicknesses. So there's a good chance that's what it is. I had an aunt of mine who was 82 years old who came down with it. And she said she never felt different. She never felt bad. And she emerged, you know, victorious. She never had any sickness. So I would say if he does have something, it's going to be the latter. And because he's been most likely taking hydroxychloroquine, it's not even going to affect him. So I don't know if it's a psyop or not, but it certainly has the characteristics of that. But, you know, if it works and helps him and defeats the bad guys, so be it.
You know, the thing is the nursing homes here in Missouri have been giving their patients tonic water, a shot a day, because it's got that in it, the hydrochloroquine, tonic water, regular Canadian dry, any of them. They all have it. Anyway, I thought that's
today, today I got some feedback, and you're right, Stu. The last show we did with Scott is very favorable, and of course they'd like Scott to be on with every show we do, but I do have a question that is asked of me often, and they wanted me to ask Scott. Scott, this geoengineering seems to be constant, and looking at the skies today across the Midwest, we're just getting sprayed like insects, like rodents, and I think people want to believe that President Trump has willingness and capacity to take on the deep state, but they're looking up at the skies and seeing the heavy stratospheric aerosol injections, the chemical ice nucleation, and they're thinking, well, the deep state certainly is still busy trying to take us down. Can you comment on that for some of the listeners who have contacted me?
Well, I think it's very logical for people to assume that the spraying in the atmosphere, the chemtrails, the aluminum particulates that are being dropped, all of these are having a very negative effect on our bodies and our environment in general. And I of course think it's one of the great scandals that we've been walked into. But it could be, as many have suggested, particulates that make the human body essentially light up like a Roman candle with some of these alternative weapons and a lot of other things. In California, for example, we're suffering a lot under the fires, and there's been a lot of intelligence showing laser weapons and in the use of sparking that and stuff. So there's some very strange anomalies, and I think the aluminum particulates are very suspicious and have a role, and it really needs to be shut down at the military level. It should be shut down, of course, by the president himself, forbidding anything like that. But, you know, we live in the world we live in. If they did infect the president intentionally to, you know, kill him or cause him to be sick or something like that, you know, I am a firm believer that God, all things work together for good to those who love God and are called according to his purpose. All things, and he shall give his angels charge over thee to keep thee in all thy ways. So even if they sprung this on the president, you know, shook his hand or sprayed him with something or did something to give him this, it will work to his advantage. I do not think he will die or become sick or be taken out. I think he is genuinely feels a prophetic call to be in the place and serve the country in the capacity that he is. And I think this is a, again, the taking out of Ruth Bader Ginsburg is a miraculous blessing. Whether it was engineered or not, I don't know. But the timing is certainly excellent, and this seems to be excellent timing as well. So, you know, we really don't know as of yet. But I think this is something that's working to the advantage with the chemtrails and the particulates and stuff like that. This is a dangerous time. The deep state, the Democrats, and the media are all desperately falling apart, and they know it. So they're going to thrash about and cause major damage. Again, the advantage of this now is it is a perfect template for Joseph Campbell's The Hero's Journey, where the hero falls into a cocoon or a cave or some sort of a self-reclusive moment, like Luke Skywalker in The Empire Strikes Back. He goes into the cave and he emerges. It's like Jonah in the belly of the whale. It's reflected in so many books and pieces of film. And this is the quintessential hero's journey moment where the president is taken out by something. And essentially, he has been taken out with allegedly the COVID-19 infection. But it's how he emerges from this. Will he be taken out, eternally? Will he be taken out in life and death? Will he be, you know, killed, die? Or will he emerge alive, and then the emergence of being alive carry with him a new awakening, a new enlightenment, a new sense of identity and purpose? You know, what sort of awareness came unto him in the moments of his prayer and his fits of fever? What new clarity came to him? And this is precisely what will turn Americans away from the negative episodes of the debate, which they may have assigned him, which the media amplify, you know, his aggressiveness and all that stuff, which I support. But it automatically turns the entire perspective and narrative in a positive direction for the president.
Well, Paul, you want to add to that? I'm inside of a grocery store, folks. We're doing a radio show from here. I'll be out in a minute, so if you hear the noise, you know what's going on. Go ahead, Paul.
So, Scott, once again, this is listener feedback, and they really want to know, what is Bathhouse Barry doing, and what is the deep state? Who exactly are the deep state? What is Trump up against, and what role do we play to assist?
Well, I would say the deep state and Bathhouse Barry and his male lover, Michael LaVon Robinson, a.k.a. Michelle Obama, are surrounded by these parasite, corrupt people who have basically treated the American government as a personal, personal fortune game, you know, Wheel of Fortune, like John Bolton and H.R. McMaster and Riggs Priebus and you know, people you regularly, some of them you see on Fox and some of them you don't, but the parasites, Mattis, General Mattis, and so many of these others who were put around the president by other people, Sheldon Adelson and many others, Pompeo, all of these people have come from the American government in Washington, D.C. Some of them have been there for 20, 30, 40 years. They live off of the political machine and the death and weapon manufacturing, the military-industrial complex, and the endless wars that it produces. All of these people are in a sense, the deep state. The worst of the deep state, of course, are the senior executive service bureaucrats that have been appointed and then become federal employees in the bureaucracy of the government, and they are actively undermining the president at every turn they can in these various agencies, in the bureaucracy, at the CIA. Gina Haspel, for example, Gina Haspel at the CIA, who is responsible for George Bush's torture program and things like that. The president still having these people around has, I think, been a dreadful mistake, and they've wounded him and betrayed him in probably ways he doesn't even know. The only solution, of course, is a military cadre of loyalists, some in uniform, some not, some active, some not, going to serve as a mercenary contractor capacity for the president to be ordered into all of these agencies and begin doing a inspection. And an inspector general, for example. Let's remember our days in the military, Stu. Inspection meant every single nook and cranny of your being was inspected, was tested, and if it didn't meet par, you were put through the ringer. Your ass was kicked. You were fired. You were put on latrine duty. You were sent back. You were kicked out. So inspection is a very key process. And it requires military bearing, military persons to step in and inspect, because we kick ass. We don't ask permission. We kick ass. We don't take lip or feedback. We tell them exactly what we want, what we expect, and we criticize harshly. That's why Lindsey Graham, in criticizing Comey for his treason, couldn't have done it as well as a military guy. A military guy could have gone in there and tore Comey apart and made him shudder and crumple and weep. But you know, we've got what we got. But I think Trump needs to assign a military group of inspector general agents to go into all of these agencies and begin to root out the problems before the election, mind you, because after the election, they're going to work overboard to try and harm him. So he's got to get guys into these agencies and drawing their fire now so they can't be firing at the president. So, for example, he needs to get like Stu Webb and myself and others to go into the CIA or go into the Pentagon and start kicking doors open, and start dragging people out, and start looking at their files, looking at their phones, looking at their bank accounts, looking at everything, saying, everybody's fired, you have 30 days to earn your jobs back. Everybody's security clearance has been suspended, you have 30 days to earn it back. Those are the powers of the president over the intelligence community and the military community, and he needs to send people in to start doing that so their fire is drawn in defending themselves, not in attacking the president. It's a very strategically sound military operation.
I know there are questions that you have to be delicate in answering. When Obama had his 8 years, he tried to get rid of a bunch of generals, a bunch of colonels, a bunch of admirals. What happened to those people? Do those people still have any influence? Are they still behind the scenes doing anything? Can you even comment on that?
Well, there's a lot of us that are still you know, extremely pissed off about what Obama did and what he did to the military and what he did to our country and all of his transgender LGBT experimentations on the military and the chaplaincy and gay marriage and all of these things that totally corrupted and rusted and perverted the American military mission, which is to kill the enemy and, you know, do it in the best, most efficient way. And you need to keep the esprit de corps and the unit together, and you can't create anything divisive. Well, that was precisely what Obama did. He wanted to divide the military from these corrupt pink flag, a rainbow flag, LGBT sympathizers, and the hardcore ass-kicking Rangers, Special Forces, PSYOP guys who were, you know, about killing the enemy and nothing else. Obama sought to split them, and in a sense, he did. Now, they're still there, myself included, and many of them are, have been sort of out there in the wilderness just sitting back and waiting, and the president has come in, and we're all very much aware of sort of like long-range scouts, how to, you know, keep out of his way, but at the same time provide him cover. And I think a lot of these people are ready to reassume their military duty, to be brought back in at their rank. I know for one, if the president wanted to tap me back, I would come back and serve in a military officer capacity. And in rejoining as a special mission for the president, the entire military could be recalibrated and reoriented towards his particular personality. And that could happen very quickly, like within a year or two, because you'd have to get your junior officers out of the – you'd have to, first of all, get into the Academy of West Point, Annapolis, Colorado Springs, the Air Force, Navy, and Army. You'd have to go into the academies and totally gut the academies from a lot of the crap that's being pushed in there and the racial sensitivity training and all that garbage. You'd have to get real hardcore leaders in the academies to get your junior officers acclimated and trained in the proper psychological condition to be really a Reaganite Trump sort of warrior mentality. Then you'd have to go in and really fire most of your generals and colonels and lieutenant colonels, and then do an accelerated battlefield commission for everyone under the rank of captain, I would say, promote them two ranks up or three ranks up, and immediately you would have a temperament change in the Army and the whole military apparatus. So that is something the president needs to pursue on the military side, and at the same time he needs to take guys who are in the military and move them into CIA, move them into State Department, move them into FBI as military advisors for the president, his eyes and ears in these agencies. Because again, let me return to this: the military-minded person, a well-trained, well-disciplined special operations military man, can go into these agencies. And like the story of the of Christ overturning the tables in the temple, Trump's military guys can go into these agencies and overturn the tables in these temples and laugh while they do it, and not in a weird way, but laugh and celebrate and say, we're in charge. The president has put us here. Again, you have 30 days to earn your job, perhaps 30 hours to earn your job back, earn your security clearance back. You're all suspected of espionage. You're all suspected of treason. You're all suspected of undermining a president of the United States, like Lieutenant Colonel Bindman and others. And we're digging it all out. I'm coming after all of you. You can cry to your unions. You can cry to your lawyers. You can cry to anybody you want. But you know what? The United States government is a quasi-military apparatus. The commander-in-chief has sole control over every federal agency and every United States military agency. So that's what we're doing. We are junior officers of the president going into these agencies to determine where the spies are, where the leakers are, and we're doing it with merciless conviction.
Question for you, and once again, this is feedback that I'm getting. geopolitics. A lot is going on in the world. And even though America has bases, 200 plus bases worldwide or probably more, it seems like we're spread fairly thin or very thin, and that America is not being defended by the military. Do you have an opinion, Scott, on where we're at on the homeland? I did 4th of July with the colonel, and he looks at me like I'm, you know, clueless and says, there is a plan, but we can't tell you what the plan is. And I just give you that 4th of July feedback because a lot of us are thinking, well, we've got a fifth column here. We've got infiltration at the highest levels of government. Where is the American person beyond looking out for himself and their family?
Well, the American person who is not military and not government has a very important role, and that is to be sort of recruiters in the field, to go out and be the civilian recruiters who go out into their neighborhoods, their kids' soccer games, or their farmers' markets, or their libraries, or wherever there are public functions, and they need to be broadcasting information and truth, specifically for the benefit of the president. They need to be setting up tables downtown that says, you know, Democrats for Trump, or independents for Trump, or you know, conservatives for, you know, a new America, or whatever their message should be. And I'm a very strong in favor of Democrats for Trump, because that automatically pulls people out of the Democrat Party and makes them cross into the Trump area, or blacks, you know, blacks for Trump. You see that all the time, blacks for Trump, Asians for Trump. But people need to be out there recruiting and being information broadcasters to pull people to the president's side. Most of these people in civilian life don't have any notion of military or government activities and stuff. What is actually happening behind the scenes? You know, that's something that just we have to wait and see. It's a very, very tight-lipped situation, but I would always advocate people, never rely on anybody. Don't rely on Q. Don't rely on me or Stu or anyone else. Rely on yourself and move forward in a very aggressive, the fight, you know, it's the old adage, fight as if the entire war depends on you.
Scott, how close do you think we are to civil war?
Well, I think you're going to have a general uprising as the lunacy and the madness and the desperation and the immaturity and the, you know, selfishness and narcissism of the left comes spewing out like a champagne bottle that's shaken up and you uncork it. I think we're with the election. On the day of the election, I think it's going to be the uncorking of the champagne bottle, and all of the left is going to come pouring out. But our job is to contain them so it doesn't go spilling all over the place. It is contained. You put a bag over the lip of that bottle so that everything that pours out is captured. It doesn't spew everywhere. It doesn't discolor and taint and spread. It is captured. So the left is most likely going to explode outward, but the key is containing it and not letting it spread. So when you have parades and these protesters and groups that are, you know, marching on towns and streets and causing damage, that's what the Second Amendment's for. Someone raises a Molotov cocktail to throw at your business or your house, you take them out in the most efficient way possible. You don't necessarily go out and look for fights. You don't go, you know, go tormenting or attacking. You fight a defensive, fixed position, ambush environment. You say, that's what Idaho and these many of these militia groups have done. They set up static lines of this is our position, this is our post, we are not leaving it. We're not coming after the leftist lunatics if they want to roam the streets and, you know, hit cats with sticks and cause all sorts of ugly noises and all this shit. Let them do it. Let them exhaust themselves like the prophets of Baal, spewing and whipping themselves into an orgy of madness. Let them exhaust themselves. And then we just stand back and say, yell louder, your gods can't hear you. And they'll exhaust themselves and then, you know, let the fires of the heaven and government prosecution arrest them for domestic terrorism and prosecute them. These are serious crimes that these people are engaged in when they engage in domestic terrorism and intimidation and coercion through violence and thuggery and looting and mobbing. These are acts of domestic terrorism, not by black halfwits in Compton or Detroit who are just walking around with their pants halfway down their butt line looking to steal sneakers in the Nike store. We know what those people are all about, but it's the white, liberal, leftist, rich, spoiled brats from New York and these other liberal areas that have gone to Brown University or all these other places and that are employed by George Soros and are part of an organized domestic terrorist operation. Those are the people that should be prosecuted for domestic terrorism because they're seeking to destabilize the United States Constitution using these psychological warfare means, color revolution means. And we took an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And that oath never goes away. So our domestic oath requires us to have our weapons ready, have them cleaned, have them loaded, have multiple backup weapon systems, and be able to defend our life, our property, and our neighbors, and contain this rebellion as it tries to spread, ally with the police, the right ones, give notice to the police that you're forming posses and militias in your neighborhoods. You don't have to give any personal information, but you say, we are standing ready if this spreads after the election because we're not going to let it destabilize our environment. And the police are on the side of the patriots. And if they're not, then they need to be removed as police, and you need to have new sheriffs elected. The sheriff is the key position. The sheriff is the most powerful person in the country because they are the sole law enforcement person in a county. So I think this is going to be triggered not necessarily in a civil war. I think it's more of an insurrection and a rebellion to try and lurch the America into a leftist anarchy. But I think it's going to fail, and I think the president is not going to allow himself to be removed from office under any circumstances, and no one else will. And I could see if the media start broadcasting propaganda, I could see them being treated like Tokyo Rose or the Charlie Hebdo building or elsewhere. I could see the American media being branded as a terrorist sympathizing propaganda organ and being shut down by the people accordingly. I don't care if it's the New York Times or CNN. They have abandoned their First Amendment power of the press calling. They have abandoned that, and now they have become a left-wing ideological amplifier that is totally inconsistent with what Americans expect from news.
Scott, sticking with geopolitics, can you comment on Zionism and what's going on in Azerbaijan and Armenia? And Israel's role, Turkey's role, Russia's role, are you comfortable commenting on those areas?
Well, as of right now, I mean, I think it's a conflict that Turkey is always responsible for. Turkey is, of course, the fly in the ointment, Erdogan is envisioning himself as the next caliphate leader, and he's wanted to take over Syria, and he's wanted to recarve the Ottoman Empire And I think he's picking a fight with the wrong people when he starts to antagonize Russia. I think Russia's strategy is just containment and quietness and trying to keep things settled down. I don't see it breaking out into a major conflict. If anything, it would be a very short flash of the pan sort of fight that's quickly settled, similar to how Turkey settled with Syria when Russia was the middleman. I could see Russia once again being the middleman and squelching and calming down any disruptions that Turkey may you know try to amplify, but will recognize they don't have the power to drown out the power of Russia.
Excellent commentary. I want to be respectful of your time. Just a last question for you. There is a American minister named Dana Coverstone, and Dana Coverstone has had a number of visions, and three times he's heard, brace yourself, brace yourself, brace yourself. And the gist of his message is the next 3 months are going to be very messy. And we have everything from the collapse of the dollar to suitcase nukes to EMPs to a fifth column. Do you put credence into those visions? And where are you at in terms of the prophecy as it pertains to America? And the one I'm going with is Jeremiah 51:7-15.
Well, I have been always driven by a sort of sociological, spiritual, behavioral, cultural analysis. How has America transformed since 1950, for example? And I was on a debate on Press TV, and I was talking a little bit about this with regards to Judge Amy Coney Barrett and the law and all of this stuff. And I've said very simply, America in 1950 until now has constantly degraded and gone down a spiral of destruction, degeneration, corrosion, perversion, with destruction of the family, the release of pornography, contraception, homosexuality, that has all grown and cancerously metastasized into transvestite, LGBT, that is then taken root into the school systems. And this has been a very insidious, long-term, decade by decade, insidious invasion into the American soil, into the American culture. And we have grown. I was born in the 70s. We have grown since 1990, when Clinton came into office and the dark age came with it. Kids born in 1990 have been grown out of unstable families, out of wedlock births, rampant drug usage, homosexuality is normal, political correctness as the religion, and all of these have seeped into the formative minds of these young kids who were born in 1990, and now what do you have? You've got 10, 20, they're in their 30s, right? So you've got kids between 18 and 35 that I think for the most part, 75% of that population is, I'd say at least 50% is roadkill, zombie, worthless, that should just be put out of their misery because there's no good going to come out of them. They're roadkill. They are like dead men on the beach screaming with their guts hanging out. There's no hope for them, and I just ignore them and totally turn away. That's 50% of that population. 25% maybe of that still have a mental problem. They're hang up. They're deformed. They're retarded when it comes to a lot of this stuff. They don't have critical thinking. They're not analytical. They're not, fact-oriented. They're all emotional. They're all this emotional feeling garbage that doesn't solve math problems, and it doesn't triangulate your position on a military map. It just has this numb nonsense SpongeBob cartoon stupidity, and that is also enveloped in the use of Facebook and Twitter and TikTok and all this other garbage. So we have 25% of that population animated with garbage and crap and nonsense and confusion. But I am always hopeful they'll have a Saul of Damascus moment when they're knocked off their horse, they go blind, and they come back into their right mind. God can always pull people out of the fire. But my instincts tell me he's not. He's preparing this generation to be destroyed. And then there's the smaller, maybe 5 to 10% generation that are good, that were born after 1990, but were born with good parents, were with critical thinking, would have been inoculated or insulated from this toxic culture, and maintain a degree of integrity and natural law, and that's the hope. Now, as a macro level, the American population is separating in a political social mitosis, a political spiritual economic mitosis. And you have the Republican Trump supporters. Not all of them are God-fearing people. Some of them are atheists, and that's fine. Some of them are Hindus. Some of them are Asian. Some of them are Vietnamese. Some of them are Russian. Some of them come from all different walks of life. But the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And they're all firing in the same direction. They're firing at Biden, and they're supporting President Trump. So those people in America are splitting away from the gangrene death Kavanaugh protesters, the lunatic fringe, which mostly occupy the coast, San Francisco, Silicon Valley, Los Angeles, New York, in some of these areas. They don't represent the middle America, although middle America certainly has a lot of retards too in this regard. But they represent the worst worst thinkers. We see them in Michael Moore, right? Michael Moore out of Michigan, and so many of them. I just hate even remembering their names because they're so sickening when I see them on CNN or MSNBC. But America is splitting apart, and I think God's doing it on purpose. He's splitting apart all of this garbage humanity. And incidentally, the people who are also splitting towards the garbage and the death are the Colin Powells, are the H.R. McMasters, are these bastards who have nice white shirts and starched ties and yet are full of death. They're the classic biblical analogy. They're a cup clean on the outside, but filled with death on the inside. That's Colin Powell. That's George Bush. That's Dick Cheney. That's Condoleezza Rice. That's Dunn Rumsfeld. That's all of these bastards. That's Hillary Clinton. That's Eric Holder. That's Lanny Breuer. That's Joe Biden. That's Loretta Lynch. That's all the people that I discovered and wrote about in my book, Shell Game. I know all of these people. They're all full of death. So those people who are professional politicians and military thinkers that are full of death are uniting with the walking zombie hordes of dead young people that are BLM, Antifa, and all these half-wits, and they are forming the generation that will be swallowed up and destroyed. How? Whether by God or by the Patriot Civil War you're talking about, that's yet to be seen. But there's a split happening. They're going to madness, where all of us on the other side are coming into a heightened sense of clarity, a heightened awareness of our constitutional rights, and an unfailing passion to defend those rights. We've seen the courts and the laws and the FBI and all of these agencies completely abandon everything that Americans thought they represented, which was law and order and justice. With the deformity and the destruction of the FBI and the CIA and the courts completely showing that they have nothing to do with justice, Americans are now coming out of the false justice, and I think they're going into a common law, frontierman sort of attitude. And I think it's going to translate into almost a tribalism, where it's all of us rejecting the federalism, rejecting the federal government, and rejecting all of the far left wing, protester types, and you're also rejecting the endless military industrial conflict and endless wars that has set us on this course of death and damnation. I think all the bloodshed we've caused all over the world has had a spiritual payback to us, and that's what this season of madness and chaos has done. So I think people are separating, and I think in a sense we have to look to the future, never backing down, never retreating, but always marching forward with our bayonets forward, and we're not in any way intimidated or compromised or seduced by the left or by any of these enemies.
You're killing it, Scott, and I so appreciate the efficacy that you convey. We're getting a lot of interference, and I'm not surprised because we're over target. Can you close with maybe one or two points to the listener? Your book, Shell Game, fabulous. I did read Lucifer's Bankers also. I am thankful, grateful for what you wrote and what I've read also by Brad Birkenfeld. What can you leave the listener with today? A couple of points. I mean, there's so much to digest, so much to consider. What do you want to leave the listener with today?
Well, the Lord says, fear not. The Lord says, he shall give his angels charge over thee to keep thee in all thy ways. The Lord says, you know, blessed is the Lord my God, who teaches my hands to fight, my fingers to war. So let us stand
with my
in
dad,
prayer
bought
and let us continue moving forward. And I would say anybody who wants to follow my information, they can go to shellgamewhistleblower.com.
And Max Deer.
Hey, Stu, you're not muted, Stu.
I didn't hear. I was being questioned. I apologize.
Let me just say, people can follow me at shellgamewhistleblower.com. Shellgamewhistleblower.com, and the report is Shell Game, a military whistleblowing report. And I would just say this too: Nisha Sharma, who is running for Congress, who I met with, has just released an ad in which she openly describes the deep state failing and terrorist financing. So we are finally getting into the corridors of power. So it's a very exciting thing.
By the way, I want to mention, I guess, Omar of Minnesota up there is in trouble, Paul. And from what I understand yesterday, I don't know the whole details on it, but apparently she's been funding some of these Black Lives Matter Antifa types. She's been passing money through one of her aides, and he's under investigation. Okay?
So there is so much criminality and corruption that one sometimes doesn't even know where to begin. Scott, thank you for your message today. We'd like to have you back on. Stu and I, we get to do several shows a week, but we'd love to have you back, and we appreciate your contribution to what we're trying to make happen here.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. It's an honor to be with you, and God bless you. And let's look forward. Let's look happy, the happy warrior. We've got nothing to fear. And we are going to be victorious, and we please God with a thunderous bellow and our roaring laugh in the face of the devil. We are full of passion and power, and let's use it. Let's march forward. Let's win souls, but let's terrorize the devil and be proud as we do it.
Amen and amen. Oh, thank you, Scott.
Thank you all. Appreciate it, both of you.
Well, okay.
Sorry to make the noise here, but I'm in the car today. Later.
All right. Take care.